last week with a little kind of a disclaimer. I'm going to start out this week with another disclaimer. This is in the text. God prompted the Apostle Paul to write this to a church for a reason. This is serious business. I'm not going to pull any punches. We're going to hit this thing square on the head. I asked a couple people in the first service. I was like, how was that? And they're like, man, that was intense. Well done. It was intense, though. I'm hoping that you should have come to the first service. But that being said, we're going to dive into this passage and find out what God's intent for sexual intimacy in marriage is all about. So 1 Corinthians chapter 7, starting in verse 1, it says this: Now concerning the matters which I have wrote to you, it is good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman. But because of the temptation to sexual immorality, each man should have his own wife, and each woman should have her own husband. The husband should give to his wife her conjugal rights, and likewise the wife to her husband. For the wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise, the husband does not have authority over his body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another, except perhaps by agreement for a limited time, that you may devote yourselves to prayer. But then come together again so that Satan may not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Now, as a concession, not a command, I say this: I wish that all were as I myself am, but each has his own gift from God, one of one kind and one of another. To the unmarried and the widows, I say that it is good for them to remain single as I am. But if they cannot exercise self-control, they should marry. For it is better for a man to marry, better to marry than to burn with passion. Last week we talked about God's gift to us, God's command to us when it comes to sexual morality. The best equipment that we have, the best tool of defense we have in the sexual morality is quick feet. Run. We're not strong enough. The passion for us to be with someone was ordained by us, by God himself, and Satan through sin has twisted that. And since that passion was God-given, but Satan has twisted and perverted that so much, he says, when it comes to this thing, run. I gave you the desire to be with her. I gave you the desire to be with him. And since sin has come in the world, it has messed that original thing up. And so therefore, you need to run as quick as you can whenever you see it. Every sin a man commits is outside his body, but a man who sins sexually sins against his own body. That's what we talked about last week. Paul once again mentions a previous letter, which we don't have an account for, but he talks about how he says that it was good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman. Now we need to know that Paul is not contradicting what God has already called good and holy. God looked at Adam and said that he was lonely. He needed a helper, so he made Eve. The two shall become one flesh. And he says, go be fruitful and multiply. So God said for a man and a woman to be intimate sexually was a good thing. Paul's not coming back and saying it's a bad thing. What he's talking about is ministering. He's talking about ordering the church and being able to serve and love the church. And he's saying, me, I'm able to put God and then the church. But if you're able not to control yourself and you have a spouse, then that spouse becomes next in line. It's God, your spouse. And then out of result of being with your spouse, if you have children, then it's your children. And then later on can be the church. He said, I think it's good that if you can devote your time to the ministry and not have that as an extra step that's in the way, that's great. But if not, it's better for you to marry than burn with the passion. So for me, when I interviewed here, I made it very clear that this church was not more important than my wife and my kids. And it would never be more important. That there would be a Sunday that I think it's more important for me to take a day of vacation and go cheer my daughter on at a softball tournament than to preach a message, because my daughter wants her dad to support her, to love her, to encourage her. My wife will become before any other person in this church. And so I made it very clear, my father-in-law, who's a pastor, he says, Paul, don't ever sacrifice your family on the altar of ministry. And so I think it's very important that we understand what Paul's getting at here. He's talking about some priority levels and the priority for to be involved in the church. But if there's a family there, that family takes precedence. And then comes the church. Verse 2, Paul writes and it says this, but because of sexual temptation, or the temptation to sexual immorality, each man should have his own wife, each woman should have her own husband. In light of last week's message about running when tempted with sexual morality, if we just run aimlessly, you'll grow tired. So we have to have a direction to run. And Paul's telling us when it comes to this, not only just run, but run to your spouse. That's where you run. When there's a temptation to sin sexually, you don't just run, you don't just close the computer and walk away, you notify your spouse. You run to your spouse. All you married folk here, God has given you a spouse to love on and to be loved on by. This is not in your bulletin, but I want you to write these things down. When running to your spouse, we need to communicate three things. We need to communicate honestly, regularly, and effectively. Again, when you communicate, when you run to your spouse, you need to communicate three things. You need to communicate honestly, regularly, and effectively. Many of you know the five love languages. Our marriage ministry has done the study on the five love languages many times. I encourage you, if you've not been through it, or it's been a while, to go to it. That what the premise is, there's five ways that us as humans love to be loved by and ways we typically love other people in. And they are, these five things are time, touch, words of affirmation, service, and gifts. Those are ways that typically people want to receive love. Just come sit by me on the couch. Okay, I'm here. Now what? That's it. Just right there. Thank you. Are we going to talk about anything? Nope. Just wanted you here on the couch with me. Time. Touch. Hold hands. Arm around. Random hugs. Kiss. Words of affirmation. You're a good husband. You're a good wife. You're a great mom. Our kids are lucky to have you as a dad. You know what? Your company is blessed to have someone who's a hardworking like you. Your boss, I bet, loves having you. The company would not be where it is today. Our family is in a great place because of your leadership, because of your love or your sacrifice or your creativity with our family. Words of affirmation, service. Hey, I'm going to mow the grass as soon as it quits raining. I'm going to bag up all the leaves and I'm going to get things done. I'm going to take all the stuff in the flower bed that we've been trying to clean out. I'm going to get that done this weekend. I'm going to load and unload the dishwasher, switch the laundry over, put fold up socks, service, gifts, random flowers that show up at the office. Maybe a gift card to James Avery. Hey, on your way home from work today, here's a gift card. Go get that necklace you're wanting. Or better yet, guys, if you're taking notes, go by James Avery yourself. If it's you that likes, if your wife likes gifts, and pick out the necklace yourself. Those are ways people love to be communicated in. And husbands, God gave you a wife to love, serve, and to sacrifice for. And to be her fulfillment intimately. Wives, God has given you a husband to love, serve, and sacrifice for, and to be his fulfillment intimately. Question is, do you want your spouse looking at, running to, or clinging to anything else but you? The answer to that question is absolutely not. Then sit down together. Communicate honestly, regularly, and effectively about what you're feeling, what you're thinking, what you're wanting. It might even be necessary to bring in a counselor or another married couple that you love and respect. Especially if those waters that you usually have navigated through have been rocky and rough at times. Well, Paul, we don't really talk about that because it creates a fight every time we go there, so we just ignore that. Is that how you would raise your kids? Every time I ask my daughter to clean a room, she throws a fit. So we don't ask anymore. We don't have any expectations of our children because, you know, they could get upset. As silly as that is, you know, that's exactly how many of us have approached our marriages. When we talk about this, it creates tension, so we just don't talk about it. My question is, how's that working? I'm not saying it's going to be easy, especially when we are dealing with things in the past like maybe abuse or rape or other previous partners, a loss of trust or pornography. It makes it difficult, but it's necessary to have these conversations. For me, at my house, this is how it goes. I look at my wife and say, you know what? This is a tough week for me. Over the last 2 days, it's been rough. Or, you know what? I just don't feel as strong as I need to right now. And I communicate to my wife effectively, honestly, and regularly about me, about where I'm at, because God has given her a task, an opportunity to love me and to serve me, to sacrifice for me. If I'm not honest about what I'm desiring or lacking, then I'm not giving her the opportunity to show me the grace and the love that God has put her in that space for, and vice versa. And for me, the two ways I love to receive love is through touch and words of affirmation. And what that does is communicates to her that, you know, next time we're in the car, she says, she reaches over there and, you know, motions for me to hold her hand. Well, I'll tell you what, I like that. Chest gets really big, you know, I'm like, you know, we're walking around down the mall and all of a sudden that hand comes up. Even with my kids, when they walk up, they just walk up and they grab my hand. Man, I just love that so much. My boys have gotten older. They don't do it at all anymore, but that's understandable. But for my daughter, before she leaves out of the door, she's like, Dad, give me a kiss. I love that. But the words of affirmation. I get that text from her. How's your day going? That's going good. You know, not too bad. Hey, I know you got a meeting at 1 o'clock. Just know that I'm praying for you. I love you. You're amazing. You're a great leader. You know, I love it. There's something about the words of affirmation from my wife that means so much more than, no, don't take any offense to this, than any of you could ever say to me. When it comes from her, it's huge. I could run through a brick wall without even getting hurt. But we are called to be that for our spouse, to love, to serve, to sacrifice, to be together intimately. Now, on a side note, you didn't pay for this. This is a little side note. I'm not a big fan of long engagements because you got parents who are like, hey, look, you know, I'm for this. The other set of parents are like, I'm for this. And then it's like, we're going to create a 3-year timeline. It's like, that's tough. I've watched couples. I myself was in that. My wife and I, we dated 8 months later. We were engaged. Her mom goes, you have to wait a year before you're getting married. Why? Because you don't have a house. I'll find one. You don't have a job right now either. I'll get one of those too. You know, like, give me the list and I can have that list done by the weekend. Because I'm in love with this woman. I want to be with her. We waited a year and had our brother not been my roommate, we might have fallen. We put in guardrails and guidelines to keep ourselves pure during that time. I remember talking with a couple one time. They're like, you know, we really desire to be pure on our wedding day. We want to be able to say we waited for each other, you know, but we love each other, and man, the fire's hot, but we got our own fire rings, and we don't want to blend the fires together. So what's the way we could just keep passion, you know, strong, but not crossing lines? And I was just joking with him. I said, the next time we are together on a date watching movies, just wear gardening gloves. That'd be really awkward. You know, you put your move on your girl and she sees this like gardening glove come across. No joke. Like the next day I got a picture going, hey, they're wearing gardening gloves. It was so awesome because they truly wanted to honor God, but they were madly in love with each other. And Paul says, listen, if you have that passion burning within you, it's better to get married than to let it just burn, because the passion to be with the man or to be with the woman, to be united intimately, to be united sexually was God-given. It was God-ordained. And Satan has done a wonderful job of tearing that apart for the church. So, what do we do? Not just run to our spouses and communicate effectively, regularly, and honestly. The second thing is this. Don't deprive. arrive. Be present with your spouse. It says here in verses 3-5, Paul says, the husband should give his wife her conjugal rights, and likewise the wife should give to her husband. For the wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another, except perhaps by an agreement for a limited time that you may devote yourselves to prayer, but then come together again so that Satan may not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Now, before some of you get real excited here and go, I hope my spouse is listening. It says, don't deprive one another. Let me be very honest and tell you, there's a difference in depriving and refusing. There's a big difference between depriving and refusing. Let me explain it to you this way. One of your kids walks up to you and they say, can I have a cookie? You say no. Are you depriving them of the cookie? It may feel like you are, but no, you're not. You have 1,000 good reasons why you should not have this cookie right now. We're fixing to have dinner. You just had a cookie. You don't need another cookie right now. There are thousands of reasons why you may not give your child food before a mealtime. And so you say, no, not right now, later. Or, you know, we're not going to have one just because it's 6 o'clock in the morning and you just woke up. We're not going to have a cookie right now. Go back to bed. It's Saturday morning. Go watch cartoons, something like that. However, if you have cookies on your cabinet and you have them out for display and you have zero intention to ever serving anyone in your family those cookies, that would be depriving. Paul says, don't deprive one another. The Greek word there is, and I'm going to mess this up, but it's apostarehao. And what that means is to defraud or cheat. It says, when it comes to the sexual relationship with your spouse, do not defraud them or cheat them in this way. It doesn't mean no. It means don't defraud them or cheat them in the area. Deprive implies there's a level of intimate activity that is necessary or even healthy for marriage. And to extend the food analogy just one step further, it doesn't mean that we should be aiming for the minimum standard either. For instance, concentration camps have proven that you can keep a person alive by giving them one meal a day at 800 calories. But that is not healthy. If we take the same approach to the intimacy that we would have with our spouse, is it healthy? Or is on the brink of starvation and desperation. So, I don't believe we should be aiming for the minimum, but we should realize that there is a level that two people can agree on to feel comfortable and intimate and close and not defraud or cheat the marriage, but have healthy and intimate relations. And why is this communication so vital? And this is why communication is so vital to the marriage. To talk about it, to say, I'm hurting right now. I'm feeling alone right now. I'm weak right now. Communication is necessary for the marriage relationship. If you read verses 3-4, when what goes through your mind is exactly what it means. Married people, God gave you a spouse, and one of your opportunities is to give them love in a sexual way. Sexual intimacy was created by God. It is not an obligation, but it is an opportunity. And like I said earlier, Satan has done a fantastic job of robbing Christians the joy of enjoying your spouse. I don't know how many people I've counseled where they've been brought up in a Christian culture thinking that sex is bad and evil, only to come around and within a moment's notice get married and find out that it's holy, right, and wonderful. We've got to stop in order to keep kids on a healthy, pure path, just painting everything as being bad and evil and horrible, and then go, oh no, just kidding. We just said that just so you wouldn't do it. But now you're married, you know, this is something that God has created and it pleases God, and this is a part of what God does to keep a marriage strong and united. We have got to stop, we have to quit lying to keep people, trying to keep them on the right path. But I also understand it's not as simple as it sounds. As I mentioned earlier, there's baggage. There's some of us have dealt with previous marriages, loss of trust and pornography or abuse, whether it be verbal or sexual, rape. We deal with that. It's prevalent in our broken society. So the chances of you being able just to read those verses and go, oh, that makes sense, and just be happy in harmony is probably not the case. So that's why you need to bring someone in. But should we allow these things to stand in our way and loving the one God gave us? Look at what God did for us. When the cards were stacked against us and restoring our God relationship, God did the unthinkable. He loved us so much that he sent his own son to die in the place for us. When we deserved death, God gave us life. Conquering those skeletons in your closet is not easy, but I promise you it would be worth it. Jesus going to the cross was not easy, but it was worth it. The last thing is this: togetherness guards against temptation. When you are apart from each other intimately, you should be together through prayer. If we believe prayer is a powerful weapon against the enemy, then why would we not use it more often? Nearly every morning, not every morning, but nearly every morning, my wife and I will roll over in bed and we'll talk about the day and we'll pray for one another, pray for the day, pray for the challenges that are ahead, pray for our dreams, pray for our kids, pray for what's going on. It is powerful. You need to be praying with your spouse. Some of us have been married for years and we only pray at the dinner table. I'm telling you, you're missing out for your wife or your husband to truly hear your heart and how much you truly do love and care for your family. When I do marriage counseling, I talk about four F's: faith, family, finances, and fun, because sex doesn't start with an F. That's how I lead my marriage counseling. Y'all are in church, y'all didn't laugh. Usually it makes it a little embarrassing for a couple fixing to get married. They're gonna kind of giggle a little bit. And I said, these are the four things that will tear a marriage apart quicker than anything. A difference in faith. I'm a believer, they're not. They came from this background, I was raised this. That's difficult, that causes tension in a relationship. Family, the in-laws, the outlaws. You gotta work on that. If you're gonna bring two, you're gonna bring the whole group with you. And I've seen families cause a difficult time in the marriages. Finances, how we give, how we save, what we give to, what we spend on. The difference in views and how we do that can cause stress in the marriages. And the last F, fun, that one has bigger implications than anything else, because I've sat across from my desk with married people before and I've seen them very involved in church, like faith, teaching Sunday school, and been looking or talking at divorce. I've seen people who are financially stable, who have, you know, we save well, we spend well, we're in unity. You know, they're our finances, as far as that goes, that's not a stressor in our marriage. And yet I've still seen those people in my office looking and talking about divorce. I've seen people who've gone through divorce and after it's over with have a better relationship with their former in-laws than they do their own parents. But I've yet to ever have someone come in my office, or I've never personally known someone who has contemplated divorce or have been through divorce that says, but we have a healthy, intimate lifestyle. It's never happened. When the locusts are eating away at the relationship, I've seen people who have healthy, all three of those things, but I've never seen someone contemplate divorce or been through divorce that will all actually say that their intimate lifestyle was healthy and they were on the same page. That shows you how important this topic is. This area of your marriage is important. And we don't talk about it enough at church. Actually, we don't talk about it at all at church because it makes people uncomfortable. It's weird. It's awkward. It's a private thing. But if the Apostle Paul thought it was important enough to put it into the text when he's talking about building the church, I think we should have our antennas go up and say, wait a second, if God wants us to be effective in the church and God wants our church to be effective in reaching those, we've got to have healthy relationships. Outside of Jesus, what's the next most important relationship to have? The one with your spouse. To love, to serve, to sacrifice for, to have your body created for that individual. No, that person was created for you. Your relationship with your spouse is not, your relationship with your spouse is an opportunity to show and demonstrate love and grace. It's not an obligation. They are not perfect. They will never be, and neither will you. Some of us need a little help. I mentioned last week about a good friend of mine who has a counseling practice. At the end of the service, if you want to, you can come pick up his business cards. This is not a promotion to his service. This is a godly man that I trust, love, and care for. And if you come up and grab this, that doesn't mean that you've got a problem in your marriage. It means you want to work on your marriage. Or maybe you know someone at work that needs help and you can't quite get them there, and this would be a great tool for you. But as I close, men, buckle up. Because you're the leader in the home. This falls on you. God has trusted you to lead your families. And if there is something in your family that is missing, you set the example for it. God has given us grace on top of grace on top of grace. And men, we are called to lead our families. And if there is something in our families that we do not agree with, which was better, then men, step up and lead. Love your wives, even if nothing else is ever given in return, because Jesus Christ says we are to love our spouse like Christ loved the church. And I've yet to ever see Jesus turn his back on his bride. I've never seen Jesus get frustrated, huff, and resent his bride. And men, we are to love our wives like Jesus loved the church. And so when it comes to your walk with your wife, don't you ever get frustrated and turn your back on her. Don't get mad. Don't get huffy. Don't get anything. You look at Jesus' example and how he loved and led the church, and that's your standard. You don't. I don't come to me and say, "Well, yeah, but Paul, I tried my office. You know, go to my office. And, oh, I talked to my wife about this, but she this and she this and she this." Look at how we have handled Jesus, and how many times we have walked away from his provision, walked away from his blessing, walked away from his obedience, walked away from him completely, and yet look how he invites us to come back. To forgive us and to redeem us, to make us just like him. If that is the standard and how Jesus loves the church, that, men, is your standard how you lead and love your wives. Period. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's not gonna be easy. As a matter of fact, it'll be the hardest thing you do, but it'll be the best example of who Jesus is to your wife, to your kids, and everyone else that looks at your marriage. If they can't see the hand of God in that, then where else are they going to see it?